Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
How about Adam Jones? Because I really would like to hear from him on what his view of the situation was when he was going through it, and what it is now that he has some distance from it.
I did not attempt to talk to Adam Jones because the focus of the story was more on Boston and the way it affects. The perception of Boston. Perhaps that was a mistake in retrospect.
Well, he really was the jump-off point for a lot of the discussion of that topic in this town, right?
As I said, perhaps that was a mistake in retrospect.
So that was Adrian Walker with Dale and Holly on Friday. Reamer Buck, Andy Hart back here. WEI 617-779-7937. It's been a big story all week here across the city and on the station. The Boston Globe Spotlight Race Series, which I enjoyed part one. I thought part one was great. Thought it did a nice job of painting the disparities between black people and whites in Boston, and just some jarring figures about it's worse here than elsewhere. But Bigot in the Stands and other stories, that was Adrian Walker talking about sports and race and how it ties together in Boston. And, you know, it's still a couple days removed from the Dale and Holly spot. But I still cannot believe that Adam Jones, who is the jumping off point for this piece, and Adam Jones is referenced incessantly throughout the piece. And if you're Adrian Walker, you don't attempt to reach out to him? Not at all? Get
hindsight.
His perspective?
Hindsight. It's 2020.
I mean, come on. Come on. It is. And that's my thing. The overall conclusion that Boston has a problem with race and that black athletes have had bad experiences here. I believe that. I believe black athletes, and they say they've been called racial slurs at Fenway Park. I don't have any reason to doubt them, but the reporting for this specific story was not good. He said it took him a couple months to work on it, and he talked with four people on the record: Howard Bryant, Sam Kennedy, Cedric Maxwell, and a sociologist at the University of California, Berkeley.
Harry Edwards.
Harry Edwards, who has had a long, you know, great
been around forever.
Been around forever, knows a lot about you, but still, four people and no current Red Sox players who he says he was rebuffed. Fine. But no recent or retired black athletes. How about a guy like Darrell Revis, who's played here and elsewhere? A guy like Mike Cameron, who's played here and elsewhere? I mean, a couple months to work on the story.
How about Jay Crowder?
Jay Crowder. Anybody.
Or Gordon Hayward, the guy coming in.
Why Mike Cameron?
Well, because he's a veteran. He's played here elsewhere. Played with the Red Sox.
That was a random name.
Well, he's played with the Red Sox.
That's kind of a
I mean, I have no problem with it because I think his greater point is accurate.
No, it is.
This is a story
Mike
everybody.
Cameron was like washed up when he was here.
I know, but he's played in other cities. I'm thinking of African American athletes who have been here, played with the Red Sox, played elsewhere.
But my point would be
Darren Lewis would be a guy that comes to mind.
Don't you talk to all those
grad,
people,
by the way?
And then, you know, for a story like this, 20 of them end up on the editing room floor, right? And you just like
Adrian
the top three or four get in,
right?
But he didn't even contact one on the list. Never mind 12 through 15.
He did say in the story that he interviewed other people that were not quoted in the piece, but he did not talk to any current Red Sox players because apparently they were reticent to speak. He had the comment in the piece saying that certain Red Sox players have expressed concerns to Sam Kennedy. But I still go back to, and I just assume cede the floor to you, Andy, because you weren't on the show yesterday or the day before, and I was. And my major point, with which I'm in agreement with everybody here, is that if it's true that Adam Jones was the jumping off point to this entire saga, then I would have wanted to hear from Adam Jones to see how does he feel 6 months later? Does he feel the Red Sox stepped up to the plate, so to speak, and addressed these issues? He might have a take. You know what? I was impressed with the way the Red Sox handled this. I was impressed with Red Sox fans, and I got a great ovation the next night. I came back to Boston with my family in October for a thing, but I doubt that happened, but I would like to know what his thoughts are.
I mean, this is a Spotlight team. They made a movie about it.
Right.
And Adrian Walker couldn't find Kirk Minahan's cell phone number over the span of a couple months. And
it's weird.
Kirk is not the central point of the story, but Kirk and Callahan is referenced a few times. One of Kirk's tweets is even quoted in the story. And you say you called his office extension number here at EEI? Really? I mean, come on.
It's very strange. It, you know, I do, you know, feature stories occasionally. I'm usually behind. I usually come up with an idea and realize I need to get it done in the next 2 days. And I do things like that. You leave one message, the guy doesn't call you back, and you're out.
Well, I've said it where...
But I'm not looking to win Pulitzer Prizes and have movies made about my months and months of work, right? Like, there should be a depth in these types of stories that is beyond the normal... You know, if Buck wrote a column about race in Boston, this would be fine. You know, I didn't get a chance to talk to X or Y or Z. But if you're working on a multi-month project, to say, I didn't call Adam Jones is a little... It almost seems like you didn't want to talk to Adam Jones. Like, that's how I would read that. You didn't really want to.
No, right. And I've always said with Kirk, you know, like, I've written stories where I've ripped somebody, I've ripped an organization, and I'm like, well, I have to reach out to cover my ass, but I don't really want to have this talk. So let me, like, find the most generic email. Oh, contact us on their website. Right. Okay, let me send my message into the abyss. And, oh, I'm covered. And now I can say, you know, person X did not respond to request for comment. That's the thing with Kirk. A legitimate attempt to contact Kirk was not made. Over a couple months, you could get a cell phone number. And here was that exchange when Adrian Walker. Oh, we're getting that in a second. But, yeah, so again, just and you also talk about the Calvin Hennig thing, too. So they reference the fan who was banned for life from Fenway in the story. And the Red Sox know who it is, but they're not giving it up. And Adrian Walker goes, oh, well, the Red Sox weren't giving it up, so that I couldn't get it. Really?
Right.
I mean, police know he is. You couldn't. You have no sources in law enforcement. No one you could call on there. Nothing.
And there's a pretty good relationship between the Globe and the Red Sox. You'd think there's some ties that might benefit this story. Yeah, I just, the whole thing to me felt rushed for something that doesn't seem like it was rushed.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
Right. No, exactly. It just, I agree with, again, the general conclusion, but just there wasn't a lot of depth to this reporting. And that remains, you know, a few days later, my main issue with it. And Adrian Walker didn't seem, it seemed like he had a preconceived notion in his head and he went with it.
Right.
And he didn't want to do any real.
And you
digging.
Speak of somebody who thinks that the entire series had merit.
Yeah. I think there were some good pieces. There were some good pieces. I thought part one was excellent.
Yep.
I thought, you know, I thought the one on Friday about the lack of, you know, African Americans in power in the city. You know, they're 23% of the population in Boston, and they're not really elected statewide officials. There are very few black business leaders. That stuff is all relevant. But, you know, the anecdotes, this Walker piece was not good. It was not good. And even you mentioned Gordon Hayward, Andy. I mean, one of the anecdotes that catches me, and we've all written stories, you don't put anything in by accident. You know, Adrian Walker writes, in June, four Boston athletes made Forbes' list of the world's highest paid athletes. David Price of the Red Sox, Stephon Gilmore of the Patriots, Al Horford of the Celtics, and Hanley Ramirez of the Sox. All four are black, as it happens, though since that list came out, Gordon Hayward, who is white, supplanted Horford as the highest paid Celtic. Gordon Hayward, who is white? Why throw that in? I mean, what are you getting at there? That the Celtics are paying Gordon Hayward more than Horford because of his skin color? How's it get past an editor?
That's a good question.
Like, if you're an editor, don't you say, Andy, Adrian, what are you getting at there? What are you getting at?
I mean, it is the fact. It's certainly, you know, you are adding to the discussion and clarifying to make sure everyone is aware that Gordon Hayward, who has played 5 minutes and maybe people aren't totally aware of in the city, but
I think most people know by now.
It is curious. I just find the whole thing curious. Like, what is the point of the salaries? Like, what's the
that black athletes are paid well in Boston, but they're paid well everywhere,
right? I mean, and like, there's, to me, that muddies the water, because if, first of all, anybody that knows about the NFL, you know, Gilmore's ranked because he just signed his new contract. Like, he got his bonus money and he's making his big money. It's like when Brady and these quarterbacks are number one year, but then, oh, Brady's so underpaid. Well, yeah, because he collected $40 million last year and you divvy that out over a couple. I just, the whole thing, or is there an implication that they are overpaying those guys to try to look non-racist?
It is weird when one guy jumps over another guy and you look at that current number and you go, it doesn't seem right. This is impossible. Right. How can this guy be making more money than that guy?
Because it's just the
it's when
way,
you sign the deal.
Right. It's the way it works. And it's like somebody wins the lottery and is suddenly the highest paid person in your town. Yeah. Well, they won the lottery. It's not really indicative of the hierarchy.
Right. And you know who's going to be the highest paid Celtic a year or 2 years from now? Kyrie Irving.
Right.
I mean, so, okay.
Black. Like,
right.
Kyrie Irving, black.
Well, Kyrie Irving says how much he loves Boston. There are ESPN guys saying, oh, you know, that's the guy they don't like in Boston.
Right.
I think, too, you know, the whole black, it's a separate thing. If you're a high-profile black athlete here or anywhere, race is, I think, irrelevant into how you're perceived. If you perform well, fans will like you. It's different. You know, Kevin Garnett's experience in Boston is completely different than somebody in Roxbury, Mattapan, Dorchester, a person of color who lives there. It's completely different.
You know who I would have wanted to hear from in this piece? It just popped into my head.
Hey, I was thinking about this yesterday. I'm like, who else could he have reached out to?
Phil Plantier.
My camera just threw me out of my chair.
What? You're right. I did toss it like that was a common known thing. Everyone's been talking about
this. He arrived on crutches. I mean, he was so...
You know.
Mo Vaughn.
Okay, there you go. Sure. Even better.
Mo Vaughn. Mo Vaughn, obviously black, was a marquee, was a hugely popular player during his time with the Red Sox. He had his ups, he had his downs, he had a highway rollover. He defended somebody and beat up a guy named Apple in a bar in Boston because over something. And he had his fights with WEEI. He had his days when he was talking with the media. He was not talking with the media. He comes back to Boston now. It is just a love fest. And he would have been an interesting guy to talk to about this piece,
and
for this piece.
I do think that there's a fascinating angle of race in Boston sports. I think first
Absolutely.
And foremost is success. Is if you're good, they're going to love you. Certainly between the white lines. I don't know how you treat them when you see them out to dinner, if you treat the white guy differently than the black guy. I have no idea. But I can tell you, Boston sports fans are simple. Very, very simple. Perform.
But
win for us. Now, you can go down the road of, you know, Trot Nixon types and the Dirt Dogs.
That's
and do we
everywhere,
embrace
though.
The
That's everywhere.
Wes Welker.
Look at David Eckstein.
Underside,
how beloved,
right.
How beloved he was nationally.
But
Gritty.
To me, that can become a part of the Rudy sports discussion. And is it because that slot receiver is white that you're embracing him? Is it because he's the same height as you? And you envision, if that guy could have made it, I could have made it.
That's what it is.
You know, is that something you said?
Uncle Rico. No, I don't. Because Barry Sanders was the same height as me, too. And I knew I couldn't cut like Barry Sanders.
I've said this to you before. I always thought you could have been Lonnie Paxton.
Yeah, sure. That's a good life,
put on a few
He's
pounds.
Had a good life.
He did have a good life.
But
a little long snapping, go out and have
right.
dinner.
But like if Lonnie Paxton had been black doing Snow Angels, would people have treated it differently? There's a million
know.
Examples
but
of it.
But it does tie into that, too, though. Like for some reason, fans feel they often take owner's side when there's negotiations between teams and players. They take the side of the teams, I find, more times than that, especially in labor disputes. And I'm like, why? Like, why? Do you identify more with these owners? Like, why?
I don't.
I mean, but the players are... But I think there is that, you know, and we talked about this a few weeks ago when we were in for Mud. All things being equal, I do think there is a difference in perception between black athletes and white athletes. I do think that with black athletes, there is that thing, and you saw it with the kneeling, of be grateful for the money you're making. Be grateful. Don't voice your opinion. Just be lucky you're making all this money. And white guys certainly get that, too. I mean, John Lackey got killed here. Go on down the line, but I feel like there is still that general perception with black athletes, all things being equal, here and elsewhere.
Yes, I mean, there is some of that. No, there's no question. But I would get back to the simple nature of most fans win, produce. Like, there's probably a lot of racists in Pittsburgh, and a lot of those racists love Antonio Brown. Love him because he has 1,500 yards and 100 catches, and he's trying to lead them to the Super Bowl.
But that's a good point. You know, a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, I cheer for black athletes. I'm not a racist. It doesn't matter. You can cheer for black athletes and still have racist tendencies about you. It's a different thing. You know, as Tomasi has said on these airwaves, and he's been killed for it, but I get the point. You know, there were slave owners who probably said, oh, that's my favorite slave. He worked the hardest.
Right.
Not the best analogy.
Because he made him the most money.
You get the point. You get the point there.
That's not a bad point, actually.
He's been mocked for it. I'm sticking up for my man, though. So, but again, the whole premise of the story, you know, 8 African-American athletes have said they've heard racial slurs in Boston over the last 25 years. They have the figures that is infinitely more than other cities, you know, the Joel Ward incident. And I buy that. And I think I don't discount their, you know, their stories, the opposing players' stories. But, you know, and that's what's so frustrating about this story, because the conclusion, I think, has merit. I understand why it was written, but it was just poorly done.
I said this yesterday. I'll share it with you, Andy. Now, one of the other issues I had with the piece was so much of it was built around Google searches, that if you do a Google search, when this happens in Boston, these are the kind of stories you'll read.
If I do a Google search, I can find anything.
Well, the issue I have with that is that people have certain notions of certain cities. Now, I don't doubt that there's a racial problem in Boston. I also think there's one in Philly and Baltimore and other major East Coast cities. That's just the way it is. But it is a hit point, a trigger point that people will fall on anytime you write about Boston. And the example I used, and I hate to do it all over again, but the Santa Claus thing in Philadelphia in 1968
right.
is always used as exhibit A. Philadelphia fans suck. Here's why. They booed Santa Claus. And the image you instantly have is big, jolly Santa Claus on a sled coming out and drunken Eagles fans throwing stuff at him. The story is much more complicated. The guy who was supposed to be Santa Claus didn't show up. They took a guy out of the stands who was like 5'6" and threw him out there in a dumpy old baggy, ill-fitting Santa Claus uniform. It was late in the season at Franklin Field. They didn't shovel off the stands. Everybody was pissed off. The team sucked. And now this, what? Who is that? And that's how they reacted. They didn't, quote-unquote, boo Santa Claus, per se.
And not to mention, it was 40 years ago, or whatever, it was, 50
yeah.
years ago.
And it's just one of those things that, okay, today's discussion, Eagles fans, good or bad, oh, they booed Santa Claus.
Right.
And I think that people fall back on that in Boston, in any discussion of race in Boston. I'm not saying there isn't a race issue in Boston, because I happen to think that there is. But
well, people of color say there is. 2010, 2013, 2017, it was voted the least welcoming city to people of color among black people. Boston was. I don't discount what they say.
And we are paying the price for stuff that happened a long time ago. The whole Bill Russell thing, the fact that the Red Sox had a racial problem for years and years, all the busing stuff in the 1970s. The bill is due on that. And it comes in the form of a notion of Boston being something more than you might find in other major East Coast cities.
But that's all the history books. A story like this should be about the here and now. It should be about...
But the history is relevant. I mean, you can add
history. Why I would have won.
Relevant, but it's been written about endlessly.
Right.
You know what hasn't is, as Buck said, the reaction to the Adam Jones issue. What has happened since then? You know, the PSAs that all the teams did, that whole group effort
the lead,
they did.
Yeah.
So that's advancing the story. That's the spotlight, you know, where you can
I
do something moving forward.
All five teams, do you want to count the revolution? I thought they acted heroically in the aftermath of this. They
not
stood
heroically.
Up.
Might
that?
Be a little strong.
I don't heroically. I mean,
well, they
and I agree
they,
with I have no problem
no,
with
I
the take the
disagree.
Lead initiative.
They could have swept it under the rug and said, oh, we're doing what we can and blah, blah, blah. I mean, look, you got Dave Dombrowski won't even tell you what time of day it is.
I think
the Red Sox, in the aftermath of this, they worked with the other teams. They did PSAs. They had focus groups. They had meetings. Sam Kennedy met with Buck Showalter and the Orioles management team. Yes, heroically. Okay, if that's too strong a word, whatever. But they were very proactive, and I applaud them for that.
617-779-7937. Let's grab Bob on the Cape. Bob, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hi.
I have a question.
Okay.
Is Boston not one of the most liberal cities in the United States of America?
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm sick and tired of this crap of promoting racism.
Bob, you can be Bob. It has nothing to do with it.
It's guys like you, the Boston Globe, and Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton who like to play the race card all the time and promote this BS.
Bob, there are no blacks in statewide office here, no blacks in Charlie Baker's cabinet, only six black members of a 200-person state legislature, so it may be liberal, but for whatever reason, we don't vote black people into office here as they do in other places.
I only get a couple of minutes here, but there's plenty of black people that have served on Boston City Council and other political...
Not in comparison to other cities, Bob. I'm sorry, those are the numbers.
I'm talking about Boston, but I'm a huge Boston...
Well, we're comparing it to other cities.
Trump voter, and I'm sick and tired of this racism BS.
All right,
you guys
Bob.
Keep promoting it, and I have hugged Louis Tiant and smoked a cigar with him, and the guy is money. And I love David Price. I love Big Poppy, and I'm sick and tired of this crap.
What do you think of Kyrie Irving? Do you like him too?
A platform is because you keep promoting this BS.
How about Devin McCourty? Any other black athletes you've hugged, Bob? Prove you're not a racist?
Nope, just one.
Just one? Thank you, Bob.
Some of his best friends, though.
Bob's, that's a mic drop. You say, I've hugged Louis Tiant, smoked a cigar for him. Boom. That's a mic drop.
That was random.
Wait, sick of this racist crowd. But you know, yeah, Boston is a liberal city, but you look at these numbers. Median net worth, the black households here is $8. White household, it's north of $240,000. So a lot of these numbers are irrefutable. I think some of the research was really good. But again, this Walker piece specifically, 2 months, he said it took him a couple months to work on the story. As we've discussed, would like to see more digging. Need to see more digging there. Your
Agreed.
Spotlight team, they made movies about you.
Right, there's plenty of time for people to receive messages, call you back, play phone tag for weeks on end and actually still connect with people if you truly want to talk to them.
So that was part one of a bad week for the Boston Globe, this Walker story and his appearance on Dale and Holly. Part two is the whole John Buccigross texting saga. If you were to read the Globe Thursday night, you would have thought they had big story, Life at Women at ESPN, painting Buccigross as this, you know, this lewd pervert who's, you know, swooping down on younger female employees. Then ESPN made the dramatic step of actually releasing Buccigross's text messages, and the context of the texts was left out of the Globe article. And the Globe, by the way, has had their own sexual harassment story and swept it under the rug in that piece last week, not naming any of the offenders, including the political reporter Jim O'Sullivan, who they fired. So the hypocrisy reigns supreme. Not at Morrissey Boulevard anymore, at downtown at the Globe. We'll do that next with your phone calls, 617-779-7937. Buck Reamer, Randy Hart, WEI. I check the text line sporadically during breaks. I do not keep it on during the show because, as I said earlier, I would break into tears. There'd be no host.
Are you really sensitive?
No, I'm not. No, not at all. Check on my mentions. No.
Well, I was going to say, then it means you can't be on Twitter because there's no bigger cesspool.
Especially me.
Twitter.
I will put my Twitter mentions up against anybody in the market. Shaughnessy, Borges, Jerry Callahan, Kirk, any of them.
Do you block?
No.
Okay.
Because that gives them satisfaction. And they're oh, he's in, you know. No. Don't give them the satisfaction. Oh. Mute. I've muted. Do you know when I mute? I mute when it's the same insults over and over. I'm like, if you want to get
out. Don't bore me.
Right. If you want to take a shot at me, great. But it's got to be original. It can't be the same thing over and over and over again.
I like it.
What?
I think it's genuine.
What? The Twitter hate?
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about this before.
No, but Alex makes a good point, though, in that if somebody keeps saying the same thing over and over and over and over, there's a guy that emails me all the time, and it's just like he makes the exact same point every – so it's like when I scroll down, when I see it, boom, it's gone. I don't even open it. It's just gone. It's just, I know what it's going to say.
Creativity would be nice.
Yes. Just like, you know, bring some sunshine to my day, please.
But they probably think that about us. They probably think we say the same things over and over and over.
It's different audiences. That's what I tell everyone. 10 minutes
reset,
is the average
reset
listener.
It.
We're resetting. That's right. But I'd say that because we got the text of the day here at EEI. This I love. Reamer, I hate you. You make me want to become gay so I can sleep with every man you love only to cause you pain. Worse pain than my bum would be in. So that's a good text. Like that.
I do like that.
It's good.
There's some creativity.
I love
there.
That.
I tried.
I'm driving people to our side of the fence, Buck. The hate for me is
I
so
just
real.
I don't even have a comment on that.
They are so angry. They want, and hey, if I can recruit
Did he use the word bum?
Yes, his bum would be in pain, which I think is the best part of it. Listen, hey, they talk about the gay agenda. If I can do that, that's my part of the gay agenda. Driving people to our team, Buck, because they hate me so much on the radio. That's what I'm doing. So I'm proud of that.
Yeah,
good
I
job.
I think that guy has issues beyond that person.
Good job, texter. That's right. A good one. I wanted to give him credit here on the show. Quickly here, the other, and this will be a big topic all week on Kirk and Callahan. There was that story in the Globe Thursday night at ESPN, Proms for Women Run Deep by Jen Abelson. And it's a long piece detailing proms in the workplace of the ESPN, which has had its long history, a sordid history with sexual harassment. And it talks about this younger anchor named Adrienne Lawrence, who worked for ESPN in 2015 as part of a fellowship to increase racial diversity, blah, blah, blah. She filed a complaint this summer with the Connecticut Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities about her alleged experience with sexual harassment at ESPN. She now wants to sue in federal court. Here is how Adrienne Lawrence's complaint is portrayed in the article. And then ESPN released a text. It's between her and John Buccigross. Lawrence accused Buccigross, a longtime SportsCenter anchor whom she viewed as a mentor, of sending unsolicited shirtless photographs of himself and calling her doll face, hashtag dream girl, and hashtag long legs in messages from 2016 reviewed by the Globe. Lawrence said she tried to remain cordial in the messages, but at one point responded, "You need to wear clothes, sir." So you read that Thursday night.
Right.
And you're like, Butch, what is going on here with John Buccigross? He's just preying on these poor younger anchors. So ESPN issues a vehement denial, and they're on the offense about this because I wrote an aggregation for EEI.com on the Globe story Thursday night. I get an email at like midnight from an ESPN spokesperson who says, by the way, we saw that you wrote about this. Here's our statement, and here's the text messages. We're releasing them. So ESPN was on the offensive. If they emailed me, little old me, about this story, I think they were Googling, saying who was writing about this. Let's get this out there. So they do release the text messages, and listen. Calling a younger female coworker dream girl, doll face, inappropriate. It's not benign. There's that power imbalance when you have a big anchor like Buccigross being flirtatious with younger female coworkers. I get that. It's not benign. But the context here is missing. Like the long legs line, for example, they released the texts. Butchergrass, August 1st, 2016, writes this Adrian Lawrence, "Don't forget, if you ever need any privacy, phone call, etc., you can use my office. I always leave the door open." She goes, "Thanks, I do need to use it. You are so generous. Thank you, smiley face." She then writes, "Promise not to adjust your seat height, thumbs up emoji." He writes in response, hashtag long legs. Not sexual.
Nope.
That was not sexual. But in the Globe article, they portray it as such. In the shirtless selfie that Butchergrass sends, which is strange. And he also, if you see the selfie, you can tell that he totally shaves his whole body, shaves his chest, which I'm not into. I'm not into. If you're a man, let it grow. That's what I say.
You can tell that? How do you know
you
he just doesn't have much hair?
Because you can tell. I can tell. Looking at the picture, I know a shaved chest when I see one. I'm an expert
on
that.
He's an expert.
I'll take your word.
Buck. Yes. So she writes, so he sends a shirtless selfie. And in the line they go, and she responds, "You need to wear clothes, sir," right? Like, that's the definitive point. Like, ha, she told him off finally. "You need to wear clothes, sir." Well, guess what her next line is after that? "Around this weekend?" He goes, "What day night were you thinking? Let me figure it out. Haven't had a game plan for this weekend yet. Any work better for you?" Again, sending shirtless selfies to coworkers. Not a good move.
Nope.
Not a good move. Mistake by Butchergrass. But to make it act like it was just preying on this poor girl, her next text is "around this weekend." If she was so offended by that, why would you continue the conversation and ask to make plans with him?
I had two questions on this.
Yes.
And I can see you've written extensively on it, so you should be able to answer both.
Have you written extensively on it?
I've written a few.
Yeah, you put it all together. Yes. You can see it on EEI.com right now.
Yes. I traffic in gossip.
She was how old when this was happening?
I don't know. I think mid-20s. Definitely younger.
And he is decades older.
A couple decades older. Yeah, 40s.
And his marital status is or was?
Divorced. Yes.
Divorced.
Right.
Okay. So he was free, but did he divide by, what's the rule?
Dividing
by two
conquer,
and add seven. You know that rule, Buck? Divide by two and add seven?
Something like that, yeah.
Did he break that rule? So 40-something, 20-something. Yeah, he broke that rule.
Oh, I don't like it. I think as a rule, you know, because it's uncomfortable. You know, it's uncomfortable for these women or anyone. You're trying to make it in the field. Maybe you want a legitimate friendship with Butchergrass. You want
right.
to view him as a mentor. If he wants to make it sexual, it's hard to then back off. You're this Adrian Lawrence. So I get that. There's a power dynamic. It's not good behavior. But to portray it as that he was just preying on this girl, this woman rather, and she was just not having it. She was just preying on her.
Oh, the not having it part is not accurate.
Not
no
accurate.
Question. Now, you can spin it and say it's on him to be more aware of his role, her role, his age, her age, the whole situation, because this isn't the same. There is a double standard. He could do the exact same thing with a male intern at 22 and say, "You want to get beers after Sports Center and go hang out and be a mentor." The reality of the world is it's not the same thing. When she's female, you're male.
Right.
There's just a different dynamic there.
Right.
But he should have been more aware. But you're right. He's not preying on her in the way that we've seen some others in some of these scandals that have been coming
and
out.
And the Globe says they reviewed the text messages, but I guess didn't add the context. I don't know.
Well, it was a space issue. You know,
Is
Adam Jones consulted in this piece at all?
I would have liked him to. Mike Cameron needed to be consulted with on this
Mike
piece.
Mike Cameron talk, you and me.
I love Mike. That's so weird. The more I think about that, why did I just throw that out?
I'm glad you've admitted it. And for a while, you defended
you,
it there.
You did. You dug in your heels.
And now
on
you've
it
realized it was ridiculous.
Well, that's my original.
I didn't even think.
Point your feet in, deny.
You know, my first thought was, wait a minute. He's not talking about the guy who played for the Red Sox for a year and a half was always hurt. No, I guess he is.
Well, I was just thinking of black athletes who have played in Boston and also played elsewhere. So you could have,
but there's
could have that perspective.
A million of them.
But recent. I don't know.
All right.
I would argue there's an extensive list.
Raise me five better than Mike Cameron. Go.
What? I don't know. Recent years or?
Better guys to talk to. I don't know. In
all seriousness, I think a guy to talk to about this, because he is such a great spokesman for baseball, is Darren Lewis.
So Mike Cameron's random, but Darren Lewis isn't?
No, because Darren Lewis stood up to Carl Everett in the locker room when they had the big fight. He's a Cal Berkeley graduate. He's steeped in the history of the game and issues and news and so forth. I think
not to go down this road, but I'm drawing a blank on his name. The first baseman who's like the head of the Players Association.
Tony Clark.
Yeah. Why not
Tony
him?
Clark
there you go. He played here and elsewhere. Boom.
Right.
Good job.
And as an executive who deals with these types of topics,
as an aside, that's got nothing to do with the main course of the story here, but he was a bum when he played for the Red Sox. Then he went to San Diego somewhere, and all of a sudden he's hitting 25 home runs.
How do you think that happened? probably a different topic for a different time.
No, I don't. I just think he was just off his game in
TB 12.
No, I what think seriously.
What was his number? TC 33.
He ended up playing for the Yankees. I mean, he bounced around.
All right,
so you see, we've counted a million names Adrian Wark could have reached out to. He didn't. And, you know, and again, go back to the Butcher.
In all seriousness, Tony Clark would have been a good guy.
Yeah, again, another one. Again, a couple months, and Cedric Maxwell is your only athletic source. So we love Max. We all love him, but I mean.
Sure.
There are other guys you could have.
Seems like low-hanging fruit there where you went with the easiest one that was around.
And I'm not even counting Sam Kennedy, too. I think that was an easy get for Adrian Walker.
Easy get, but
one.
I think that's a valid one.
But
sure.
No, you have to, well, I was going to say you have to have him, but then again, you have to have Adam Jones.
Right, exactly. So, you know, again, just not enough reporting there for me. And on the Buttigieg thing, no context added. It would have been important. And the Globe breaks their own rules, right? So they said they didn't name the sexual harassers within their own building. Jim O'Sullivan, the political reporter who they fired, and Kirk was the first one to reveal his identity, and that's since been confirmed by WGBH and other places. Brian McGorry, editor-in-chief of the Globe, says we didn't name any of the offenders in our own building in that article because there was no physical contact, no persistent threats, and there was a third one, no harassment either. There were no threats and no persistent harassment. That was right. It. So no physical contact, no threats, no persistent harassment.
Which would appear to be the case with this situation.
Right. Find me the physical contact, the threats, or persistent harassment with John Buttigieg.
Nothing.
Can't do it. Or even Mark James, NESN anchor Mark James, a couple months ago, sends those texts at young actress. Now, she was not having it at all. I mean, this Adrian Lawrence was going back and forth. She wasn't. That was more harassment, but still. No physical contact, no threats, and they had no problem dragging Mark James's name through the mud. So, and that was my whole thing with the Globe, and I wrote this for the website last week. Their ability to report on the sexual harassment stuff is tarnished because of such of the poor job they did looking at their own house. So, again, I'm sure it'll be a topic all week. Buttigieg, again, the context would have been important there.
Before we go to the break, Marvin Lewis stepping down as head coach of the Bengals.
I was going to tease that, Buck, on the other side.
Nice job, Buck. You ruined it.
You're stomping on my tease.
I'm going to get a good talking to you.
I was going to tease that. We were going to transition
they
back.
They're but, gone.
So first, we're going to talk to Jim in Medford, though. Jim, hello.
I'm sorry, Alex.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
I'm fine.
Good.
Mike Cameron talk on a Sunday morning, it doesn't get better than that.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly.
I just read the first installment of the, I didn't just read it, I read the first installment of the Globe article on race, and I get sad because I've been here for my entire life, and just the fact that Boston's considered a racist town by a lot of people, you know, gets to me. I was wondering, just to go back a little bit, to the, does it mention in the sports segment that the Celtics racial history that it's pretty good racial history.
Yes, and it also says that the percentage of African Americans who go to Celtics games is significantly higher than Red Sox and Patriots games. That is in the story as well.
Yeah. Does it mention the part though that the attendance during the 60s for Celtics games wasn't that great?
No.
And could that I'm just wondering, do you think that could have been racially motivated, or I mean they were winning all the time, maybe the boredom, I don't know. I'm just wondering about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's I don't know, Buck, you're the historian there. Did race affect the Celtics' sagging attendance numbers in the 60s?
No, I don't think it did.
Yeah.
I think they did okay. It's not, but were they the 13909 or was that the Bruins? There was a famous number, 13909. Someone correct me. That was either Bruins or Celtics. But no, they didn't own the town even in the 70s when I was a kid.
Right.
And in the 60s, I went to some Celtics games as a kid. I came of age when I was around 10, 11 years old. All of a sudden, Orr was in town, and that changed everything. And the Bruins just owned the town for 5 or 10 years. It was crazy. It was absolutely nuts. You can't explain it.
And to go back to the Bill Russell stuff, you know, whenever we read about the Vandals going in his house and they defecated in his house, I mean, we're like, ugh, I know. You're like, oh, I've heard this before. But the history is relevant to the perception of Boston.
So I want to point out that Mike Cameron played a total of 81
there
games spread out over 2 seasons.
He would have been an expert.
With the Red Sox hitting .219.
Well, you know. Well, even better. He had a bad time here. Did not perform well. So
he might
have
hit better if he wasn't
animus.
For all the racial.
Exactly. See, we're digging.
The pressure,
we're digging.
The stress got to.
You know, I was going
to
add this great elaborate tease for the next segment.
I think you
but
should just
been,
go with it. You'll never guess which longtime NFL coach may be stepping away from the job.
Chris Mortensen at 11:15, Adam Schefter at 11:30, and we're doing some hockey with Barry Peterson at 11:45. Reamer Hartbuck after this. Another odd little Van Halen. I like it.
screw the music. I need to know.
What happened with Marvin Lewis?
I didn't even know it was Marvin Lewis. I need to know which coach
You're
is
right.
potentially resigning.
A big coach is resigning in the NFL. After 15 seasons with the Bengals, Adam Schefter reports, Marvin Lewis is planning to leave the team to pursue other opportunities after this season, sources said. Now, Ian Rappaport has added to that story.
The rap sheet.
You don't like Rappaport?
We have an interesting relationship.
Really?
You didn't like Ian?
I want to delve further into
Not
this.
Not particularly.
Forget about Marvin Lewis.
Really?
The live tweeting of Myra Kraft's funeral
rubbed
me the wrong
way.
So that's good. Yeah.
Yes.
And let's just say I don't think he's one of the more intelligent people to cover football. I think he really struggled, and I think he's in a nice spot.
He struggled his way to a big six-figure salary. I mean,
and even he
maybe
will
seven
admit,
figures.
You know, he sits there and stuff just comes in. It's
well,
the job.
I always feel like with a guy like Rappaport, it's coming from the Patriots. Whenever he has a Patriots thing, you're like, this is their PR.
Oh, it's coming
machine.
From 32 NFL teams.
Right.
Oh, the Pats
right.
liked him.
Oh, yeah, they were fine with him. I mean, they probably like Schefter more.
Yeah.
I think Schefter's higher
Did
on
a good
their
job
list,
with the Herald.
But, he was fine, yeah.
Jesus.
Andy hates a lot of media. He hates Ian Rappaport, we just found out. Hates Trenny. Our friend Trenny.
I don't know that I've ever said that.
Hates her.
Well, I don't know that would be accurate.
You don't like that she was on the Chad Finn underappreciated sports media list.
I just don't really know what her takes are, what her journalistic style is.
You don't
is,
hate me,
what,
do you?
No, I love you, Buck.
All right, because, you know,
and
big fan, you for a long
a
time.
A feud that I want to get
to. Now, if you
want to
leave the room, maybe.
Well, I was the worst host, the guy who's not here. And the Mutt Man, who's coming in for NFL Sunday.
Bit dry, bit boring.
Yes, yeah, see? Wow. Well, Mutt took a shot at us when we were filling in from a couple
of
weeks ago.
He did.
Going, that'll be, Andy Hart and Alex Dreamer. That'll be big ratings. Like, okay, Mutt.
Right.
And then he says on KNC the other day, he's like, Reamer and Hart, they did a real sporty show for me. Like, okay, Mutt, what do you do?
It is Sports Radio WEEI.
And we didn't
the first word in the station's name is sports.
And we
sports.
Did not do a sporty show. We talked race the whole time. Again, I think. We did a lot of race talk.
We can bounce all around.
We bounce all around. We're experts
He's
on
jealous.
It.
He's jealous.
I am for slavery.
Is he still hurt? The guy who lifts all the time couldn't move a dryer for his wife without getting hurt?
Wow.
I mean, a dryer is not that heavy.
I think it's stupid.
To save $40.
Right.
Whatever
well, that's
the delivery
that's
fee
was. Too heavy. $40.
I'm proud to say, I am not unproud to say, dryer would be too heavy for me to move. I would pay.
Probably wouldn't be if you had a friend. The two of you could probably move it quite easily.
Have friends.
No, I have just glamour muscles.
I mean, with you at the time.
I have just glamour muscles. Like, I look decent with my shirt off. I'm going to say that for everybody out there. But I can't lift any. I lost to Jet in arm wrestling. I don't know if you know Jet.
We never talked about
it. He's like 100 pounds soaking wet. Well, we were right here, and it lasted. It was a struggle for like, it was like a 5-minute arm wrestling match.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you didn't have the stamina.
I didn't have the stamina, and he won. So it's
Did you run track in high school or something?
I did, but that's nothing to do with strength. And track was a reject sport in high school
The
anyway.
Question was stamina, not strength, though. You just said
I ran,
stamina.
Yeah, I was a distance runner.
And did either of you do anything like, over the top or whatever those things they do?
No, it was a fair fight.
Fair fight, and he just beat you man to man.
Man to man, exactly, yes.
It's embarrassing.
But track in my high school was always a reject sport. Like if you got cut from like baseball. Or
the skill sports, the real sports.
You go to track. It's all these like awkward like freshmen like just standing around.
You were
like,
football and baseball, right?
Yes. And
second
winter
baseman?
Track. Yes.
And we found that Andy's son is a terrific flag football player.
He is. He's a better athlete than I ever was. I was a little fat kid at his age.
Built like Deirdre.
Yes, he's Deirdre built like my wife.
Andy's wife.
And he plays
fast,
and
runs.
And he plays both ways in flag football, which is very impressive,
which
I do not. I'm one of the few
flag
football players who
he's
only plays.
One way. Flag football player.
I did not know that.
Didn't know that was a thing that exists.
I didn't know that it
First of all, I think
either.
It should be illegal. I think they should make you play both ways.
No.
Right?
No.
Like, we don't have specialization in
you
flag football.
You high-five the guy when you're coming on the field?
Yes, so thank
and
you.
And who's the other one-way player? Like, how does that
there's
work?
There's a couple. Every team has them. But I don't want to be
embarrassing.
I don't want to be the receiver.
He's on special teams in flag football.
Right.
I don't want to be the receiver, because if they throw the ball and you drop it, that's pretty embarrassing.
Not as embarrassing as standing on the sidelines because you suck too much to embarrass yourself on the field.
Chain gang. I'm on the chain gang there.
Is
moving the chains.
I mean, is this that competitive that there's
yes.
bad feelings over loss? And
for some people who take it seriously, yes.
Really?
Not for me, though. Ugh. No. I'm a glue guy. I'm a glue guy.
I guess.
My whole time in sports. I've been the team chemistry.
Good locker room
good
guy.
Locker room
Todd Frazier over here.
Absolutely.
He's the Mike Cameron of his team.
Right. As I've proven here at EEI, threatening to blackmail producers. I'm a great glue guy.
So anyway. Can I ask...
I was going to give the Marvin Lewis update from Rappaport.
Yeah, go ahead.
Andy Hart's hate for Ian Rappaport.
I just called him the crap sheet.
His hate for Rappaport dropped us off. Rappaport says...
I always liked Ian.
You like everybody, though. You're one of those
guys.
It is true. Everybody's great. Everybody's nice.
Buck will never publicly criticize anybody.
I'm the opposite. Well, I hate everybody.
Who might criticize behind their back?
There are a couple.
Do it.
We'll talk off the air, Buck.
No, that's not entertaining.
Really?
Talk on the air.
There's some...
I may not like...
You like Trenny? You think Trenny's overrated?
I do like Trenny.
Oh, Jesus.
I like Trent as well.
You like Mutt?
Mutt's a great guy.
Oh.
No.
Silence.
No, we're talking about, do I like him personally? Yes, I like him personally. He's a good guy. I talk to him
all the time.
I agree with Alex that I think he's tilted toward what he thinks they want on the
Morning Show. Jerry. Well, I think Mutt's political beliefs solely because of Callahan. He wants to ingratiate himself with Jerry, so he voted for Trump. He's become this ardent conservative.
Plus, he can't do a sports show because he's too boring when he does sports, so it's the low-hanging fruit, go politics, right?
You said that, not me. And it takes more to do politics and news than sports, let me tell you.
It's riskier. It is definitely riskier. But when you do it on a superficial level, which I think gets done on this station, where you don't really need to go deep. I'm just saying, if I wanted to listen, I would go to some station that bills itself as 850 political talk, not sports radio.
We talk about news, though. Like when the Harvey Weinstein story breaks, or Matt Lauer. You're talking about that with your friends.
Agreed. So I thought the politics would go away after the Trump election was over. It hasn't.
Well, because of Trump. Blame Trump for that. If he was a competent, if Hillary Clinton was president, it would not be a big, well, on 6 and 10 it would be. But on the other shows, there'd not be a lot of Hillary Clinton talk because she's boring. Trump, though, I'm telling you, it's Trump. Blame Trump.
I do blame him.
With that 100%. If Hillary were president right now, and for the
what
sake
would the morning
of,
show do?
For the sake of discussion.
Why, it's very easy.
For the
Jerry,
sake,
Jerry still knows Jerry against Hillary.
For the sake of discussion, I'm not going to just say, oh, the country would be going great guns. I'll just leave that out of it and say, in terms of talk radio discourse, particularly at this station, there'd be 90% less politics talk.
And I don't think I would be here.
And everywhere. I mean, because he offers you material on Twitter every couple hours.
It's what it's like.
What was that woman that came in begging for support? And she would have done anything to get it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's
your president who's providing you material, like lobbing it up on a...
The stuff
hour
he says, we
basis.
Forget. I mean, he's won. He's lowered the bar. I mean, just a couple weeks ago, he called Kim Jong-un, like, short and fat.
Right.
The wild dictator of North Korea. And we just brushed that aside. Anyway, Marvin Lewis, folks, according to Ian Rappaport, is planning to move to the front office, sources say. No head coach is more involved in personnel. A GM somewhere else, he writes. So, there you go.
Question mark. Because you can argue, and that is the long history of the Bengals. I don't know if people know this. Like, the whole thing for decades has been they don't have a ton of scouts. They don't have a big scouting department. The season ends and they tell the coaches, get out there and find players.
Right, Mike Brown, yeah.
Well, they found players. They're generally a pretty talented team that a lot of people would say you put a better coach and program in place, they would maximize it. But it's hard to get past just 0-7 in the postseason and just inability. Would you hire him to run your franchise? I would not.
No, I would not.
This job in the front office, I assume, would be very second, third tier advisory.
Well, that's what they sort of painted as. Maybe even with somebody he's worked with, Zimmer, who's in Minnesota, or go somewhere where he can just be a consultant or part of the staff. I can't imagine
Tony
any
Russo
team.
With the Red Sox.
Yes, I cannot imagine a team saying, we're blowing it up, our GM is out, our coach is out. Marvin Lewis, you come in, be head of football operations. I can't imagine.
No, and the Bengals' job, I don't think is very attractive, because you mentioned the ownership there and how bad they are, the Brown family, and... Andy Dalton's your quarterback. I would rather be at a place where you have no quarterback and you got to find the next guy than have Andy Dalton, because you are stuck. There is a ceiling there, and he's too good to get rid of, and you're paying him too much.
You can do worse.
You can do worse, but you can also do a lot better.
You might actually win a playoff game if you got a better quarterback.
Exactly. And
so you're not saying Josh McDaniels will be just sprinting to Cincinnati right now?
But this is and Volan touches on this in his notes column in the Globe today. There could be as many as a dozen, 14 openings across the league this offseason.
Going to be a lot of them, yes.
And some attractive ones. The Giants obviously already open. The Broncos, I think Vance Joseph has a good chance of being out. The Raiders, Del Rio, I think... could be out, and you still have Derek Carr there. Lots of attractive openings. And this is the offseason, I think, where McDaniels goes elsewhere, right?
Yeah,
I mean, he has to at this point.
Since it's come up, the Giants. I'm not saying Belichick is going to run the Giants next season. That's an impossibility. But two or three years down the road, Brady retires. Do you think Belichick retires too? Does he hang on here, tries to rebuild? Or if a golden opportunity for millions and millions of dollars shows up at a big-time NFL franchise, would he go there for the challenge?
I don't think so.
Everything he wants in life is right here. He gets to get down to the island.
Right.
It's the stadium.
And if
the
Brady's
legacy.
Gone, the challenge is here.
Right.
So the Patriots could even offer the challenge if Brady walks away in 3 years. And the comfort of what he's working with ownership and what he's working with, you know, with everybody in the organization.
There may not be a coach in history that has a better setup than he does.
Right. So why would you leave that?
The only thing he doesn't have, which is what like guys like Paul Brown and Halas have, is a stake in ownership.
That we know of.
Oh, you think he's got a piece now?
Didn't say that, but I've never seen his contract, and I've never seen anybody report exactly what he makes, and it's this secret between he and Robert. Oh. You know, I think the last one...
Well, Kraft said that we know when he's stepping down.
Sure. I mean, they know whatever they know, and no one else knows anything else. And, I mean, except maybe Seth Wickersham, who has Bill staying long enough for, quote, a truly dynastic...
Well,
succession.
So I interviewed Wickersham a couple months ago.
You better
when that
pushed
came out.
Him on that. I did. That pissed me
off. I said, "What does that mean, dynastic?" And he said that he wasn't talking about Belichick.
He's full of it.
He said, "Because the way I read that is, oh, but Belichick's going to hand off the team to his sons. What does that mean?" He was talking about quarterbacks, Brady to Garoppolo.
Well, then it was
poorly
terribly
written. Yeah, and he admitted
that. Because the periods and
the Rappaport write it.
No, Wickersham, no. Seth Wickersham.
It was better written than that.
Seth Wickersham wrote that. Yeah, I mean, but. Well, I think if Garoppolo were still here, if I'm McDaniels and I know that I'm the leader if and when Belichick retired, I'd think about staying. But now with Brady, you know, no one behind Brady, if I'm McDaniels, I'm going elsewhere.
Yeah, I would too. I think this, again, could be a year where they both go. I mean, they've both interviewed. Yeah, Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels, they both interviewed extensively the last couple years. If there are...
Is Patricia no longer blackballed because of the Goodell clown face shirt? Is that over now?
I'm sure that rubs some owners the wrong way.
Rubbed me the wrong way.
Me too.
I just
thought it was dumb.
Have a little fun.
It was just dumb. Yeah, but there was no need.
No, Alex. I'm not involved in it. I don't have a stake in it, so I can stand on the outside and point at it and say, "Look at the funny guy." But if I'm hiring an NFL coach, do you want to hire a guy that was parading around with a Roger Goodell clown T-shirt on?
I mean, it's one of those things where is it a big deal? Absolutely not. Right up until a player does something, and when Patricia calls him into his office to chew him out,
look
says,
"What you did?
Well, I saw you get off the plane from the Super Bowl. What I did was not really much different than that." You know, these guys, they have so much under their control, and there's so much money at stake. I'm sure a lot of owners didn't care for that. But then you look at what he did defensively and the whole Belichick thing. He'll get a chance somewhere.
Do you prescribe the Jerry Callahan theory that he has to shave that beard before he gets a head coaching job?
Why?
Not professional.
On pure physicality, that's not an issue at all. I mean, look at Rex Ryan and Wade Phillips.
What's wrong with a beard?
I don't like that beard like that. I'm like George Steinbrenner.
No,
clean cut.
You don't have to like it.
Clean cut. Clean cut.
I don't understand. Men's regular. There's a million beards in this world.
I don't like it. Like, my brother lives in Brooklyn. He has, like, that hipster look with the mangy long hair. And no, get your hair cut.
Yeah, I don't care for that.
Get your hair cut.
But
clean cut.
If they can, I mean, I know it's a much more well-kept beard, but Sean McVay has a beard, right? I mean, all guys have a look. Bill has a terrible look.
It's
and
not good.
No one cares because he wins. Mm-hmm. And everybody would have said he's an idiot with
he
cut
was 2
sleeves.
And 14.
Right.
Clean yourself up.
I mean, he was right down that row, 5-11. If he goes 5-11, like, all of a sudden his sleeves are dumb, his looks are dumb, he's mean to reporters. Why? Because he loses.
617-779-7937. Coming up next, circle back to Patriots Steelers, the Globe hypocrisy. That's all on the table. And also, a little interesting, I care about this, the XFL.
Coming back.
May come back. This is going to be a league with...
Can we get Ordway on to talk about it?
With head hits? Why?
Ordway and me had a big fight, and he guaranteed the XFL was here to stay, and it was going to be a huge hit.
Well, they're going to make players stand for the anthem, I bet. We'll do that more next. And again, Pat Steers, circle back to that. Reamer, Buck, Andy Hart, WEI.
That was a huge thing.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.